This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN1290. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from the Calgary Herald, George Johnson. George, good afternoon and thanks for joining us.
No problem. I just finished shoveling, so everything's fine.
You wouldn't believe this. As an ex-Winnipegger, you really wouldn't believe this, but there is so little snow here in Winnipeg that we can see grass right now on January 31st.
I don't even want to get into it, but you're right. I mean, I wouldn't believe it.
Okay, well, there you go. You can take our word for it.
I will. No, you guys are beyond reproach. There's no question.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people who will line up to disagree with that comment, but that's for another day and time, I think. George, obviously brought you on to talk about the Flames ahead of the Jets' first visit to Calgary Monday evening. You know, are people finally giving the Calgary Flames their due credit as being a legitimate playoff contender?
I don't know. We all kind of think this is all being done still by hologram. I think I think people here are sold on the work ethic. They love the young guys, Monahan and Gaudreau and Brody and Russell and all that kind of stuff. But I still think that there's optimism. But I still think after 5 years of pain that there's still a bit of a look and wait and see kind of attitude.
George, you mentioned Johnny Gaudreau. Simple question, but just how good is this kid?
He's just nuts. I mean, he's nuts good. And you go in the room, and he looks like he's put together with pipe cleaners, and you're kind of going, are you joking me? I mean, he's that kind of tiny. I mean, I haven't had a guy since Vernon and Fleury that I could actually look in the eye, right, in that room. And there he is. But he has that kind of thing, and you guys have heard about it, and everybody, but it's true. He has that kind of thing where you keep expecting him to get crumpled like a discarded cigarette package, and nobody seems to be able to find him. And then he pops up in these advantageous positions, and you can see the confidence in him growing. You can. I mean, he's on their number one line now with Hudler and Monahan. He gets all the power play time. And, he's an amazing little player. And he's caught the imagination, obviously, of the city. And it couldn't come at a better time because as good as Monahan is, solid, efficient type player, Gaudreau, you can't take your eyes off him when he's on the ice. He's really fun to watch.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is George Johnson from the Calgary Herald discussing the Flames. And, George, we were talking about this last segment before we brought you on. We were talking about the Flames and how everything sort of starts with their back end. And their back end, Mark Giordano having a tremendous year for the Flames. Where do you think he ranks among the top defensemen in the entire league?
Well, it's pretty tough to say, but I certainly think he's in that top group now, and in terms of Norris Trophy votes, I mean, if this team gets in, he's got to get serious consideration. I mean, he just does. I mean, he plays in all the tough. I mean, I can go through all the cliches we hear about, Ryan Suter and Shea Weber and PK Subban and all that kind of stuff. But a lot of those teams have a far better supporting cast, and Giordano. Him and Brody, he and Brody have meshed fantastically. I mean, Brody's a really good skater, and Giordano is just an all-around type, really solid type defenseman. I think his point total has surprised everybody, but his play off of what he did last year when, he was given some Olympic consideration. Steve Yzerman called and after the announcement was made and said, you were on our radar, you were high on our list, and we're sorry you didn't make it. That's just kind of continued over this year.
George, the Flames made a kind of a quiet acquisition. I guess it was a week and a half, 2 weeks ago now. It was Drew Shore from Florida for Corbin Knight, and it seemed like Brad Treliving was pretty excited to secure Drew Shore's services. What can you tell us about him and the Flames' expectations for him?
Well, again, he kind of fits. They have become a skating puck pursuit team, whereas in the past they were a big kind of lumbering kind of let's recycle 1,000-year-old, you know, hockey players type.
Olli Jokinen,
Jeff Fries, and Brian Marchman, Tony Amonte. I mean, the list just goes on and on. I mean, you know, those blue recycle bins we have to fire out here every Tuesday, they should have come with a flame in them, you know, every week. It was kind of like that. So they want to get younger. They want legs. They want to be a pressure team. They want to be a puck pursuit team. And, you know, just the fact that, you know, Brian McGrattan is now down in Adirondack, you know, a fan favorite here for obviously for what he does and stuff like that, shows you the direction that they think that they're going to go and that the league is going. And I think Drew Shore kind of fits into that.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is George Johnson from the Calgary Herald, discussing the Flames. And George, you mentioned him in passing when we were talking about Johnny Gaudreau, and that's Sean Monahan. How has he been progressing in his sophomore season in the NHL?
Well, I mean, it's funny because here's a guy that's, you know, in his second year, and you know, a lot of kids that are high draft picks, as Monahan was. I mean, he was the highest draft pick this club's ever had. His franchise has ever had. You know, offensively, if they've got the goods, you know, they improve. This guy is a different kind of cat. I mean, he's their center. He's their shutdown center. He's the guy that will play against all the top guys. He's their pivotal faceoff man. He's everything that is kind of out of the limelight that they have watched him progress. He's had a couple of long goal-scoring slumps this season. He's gotten through them, and Bob Hartley has never said anything because he knows what he's doing on the other end of the spectrum for this hockey team. So I don't think that they could be any happier with this guy because, you know, he's a two-way. He's going to be a real good two-way centerman who can produce offensively for a long, long time in this league. So I think they're very happy with him.
George, we haven't had you on, I don't believe it, since T.J. Brodie signed his contract extension with the Flames. What were your thoughts on that extension?
Well, I think it was something Brad Treliving has had to do. It's funny, he really hasn't had to do a lot, and we thought, oh, this poor guy's coming into a, you know, welcome to our world, won't you come on in kind of thing, and he really hasn't had to do a lot. You mentioned Drew Shore. I mean, there's been some tinkering. The Brodie thing was important to him, and I think it was important to the franchise, not just because they think that, you know, he's going to get better, but because he and Giordano just, I mean, you know, they're a pair. They're like Lewis and Martin. They're like, you know, Gershwin and his brother. They're like Oscar and Hammerstein. Those two guys are together. And when Brody's out there, Giordano feels completely at home. And when your best player feels completely at home, you better get the guy that's making him feel comfortable under contract for a while.
Yeah, George, Michael Backlund is a guy, obviously, years ago, the Flames drafted him. I think probably had expectations higher for him in terms of an offensive production.
Yeah.
He's a pending RFA now. Does he fit into the team's maybe long-term plans as more of a checking role, or what does this team, like, what does Brad Treliving think of Backlund, and where's this all going?
Well, I mean, he suffered that abdominal muscle pull working out in Sweden in the off season, and he's been, you know, he's been missing for long periods of time, came back, played a couple of games, felt rotten, was done again. So he's kind of been in and out. He progressed amazingly well last year when they had the really good second half to the season. And, you know, he was kind of the guy that they've now made Sean Monahan into. It's a good question on what they're gonna do with Michael, because I don't think he has an amazing offensive upside, but he's another one of those guys who last year, as I said, took on the Monahan role. You know, played against all the top centers, played the tough minutes, took the defensive draws, you know, in tight games, and they were in a lot of them last year in the defensive zone and things like that. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with him, because they already kind of have a guy like that in Monahan who is going to be with this team, people around here hope, for the next dozen years. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with him, because do you want to have a second guy like that? I mean, maybe he's your third line guy. I don't know. I can't read Brad Treliving and Bob Hartley's mind. Not that I'd want to even try and read Bob's, but you know. So it will be interesting. But you know, I think that they want to see him till the end of the year, and then they'll go about their business from there.
George, we'll let you go in this final question. We've been talking about the trade deadline, you know, for the a couple segments today, as we're wont to do. Trade deadline's 31 days from today. Are the Flames buyers at this coming deadline, and what do you think they'd be looking to acquire?
Well, I think that they'd be looking. I can't see them doing anything major. I mean, Mike Richards' name come up here, and I mean, good Lord, who wants to take on that kind of salary? I mean, that to me was just completely off the wing nut dial. And I'm sure that the Kings contacted them, because anybody that's got cap space, the Kings, I'm sure they contacted them.
Sure.
But you know, I think they'll be looking to. You know, if they continue to stick in there, and there's no reason to believe that they won't be in that mix, you know, 10 to 7 or, you know, that whole muddle that we're starting to see unfold in the Western Conference, I can't see them doing anything significant. I can see them picking up, you know, someone like a Drew Shore, you know, somebody that they think can add offensive depth to their team and some speed and the type of player they want. But as in terms of buyers, I really can't see it. I mean, Brad Treliving's going to want to put his mark on this team with his first deal, and I can't see him pulling a big one when everybody here is quite happy at the moment with the way things are going.
George Johnson covers the Calgary Flames for the Calgary Herald. He's a frequent guest here on this program. George, appreciate your time as always. Enjoy the shoveling, I guess.
Oh, stop it. Yeah, I know I will. Good. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, George. Take care.
Thank you. Okay,
bye-bye. Bye-bye. Before we go to break, just wanted to mention an upcoming floor hockey fundraiser for a friend of ours who actually, he unfortunately passed away a number of years ago. He was a good friend of Illegal Curve, a good friend of Dave Manuk in particular from IllegalCurve.com. It's the Richard Tapper Floor Hockey Tournament in support of Camp Masad, which is a local camp here in Winnipeg, in the Winnipeg Beach area. If you have any interest, cost is $50. It is upcoming on Sunday, March the 22nd. 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. A great opportunity to play some floor hockey and support a great cause. Be sure to get in touch with one of us via Twitter, via email. You know how to find us. If you have any interest in participating in that event, we'll be glad to see you there, and we'll be glad to send you the information. Let's head to break. When we come back, we talk about Steven Stamkos and his future in Tampa Bay. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
1:45 in the afternoon here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to George Johnson of the Calgary Herald for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview, or if you missed any of the show whatsoever, it will, of course, be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on our website, IllegalCurve.com. Also want to welcome to the program as a new sponsor, Not Auto Corp. With their fabulous new showroom at Waverly and McGilvery, Not Auto Corp, new luxury auto and art gallery. So be sure to check them out when you're in the Waverly and McGilvery area. Not Auto Corp, tell them Illegal Curve sent you.
Can't miss it. It's a beautiful building.
Beautiful building. Yeah, it's just a fantastic looking building. So exactly. You're already looking at it as you drive past that corner thinking,
pull in.
How great it is. Pull in. See if you get yourself a new luxury car and some art while you're at it. Because, you know, that's what I'm probably going to head out here after the show. That's what I'm in the market for.
Well, Drew, you just ordered a menu.
I just ordered a menu. Exactly. It's to me, that's a work of art.
Well, and I, you know. To others, it's open to interpretation.
Exactly. Pierre Lebrun, TSN Hockey Insider, was on TSN 1050 earlier this week, and he discussed Steven Stamkos, who's eligible for unrestricted free agency at the end of next season. A lot of ties have been made in past between Stamkos and the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yes.
Here's Pierre Lebrun on that subject.
And I think it's one thing for him to say he wants to stay in Tampa, which he would. About his answers, how detailed it was. And he said that he hopes, like Kane and Taze did in Chicago, to sign an extension 1 year out this July. So there's obviously been some thought put into that from Steven Stamkos. And now there has to be a negotiation, which hasn't started yet. It's going to start after the year between Don Meehan and Steve Yzerman. Let's see how that goes. I mean, this is going to be, you know, the biggest contract in Tampa history if they agree. But let's see how it goes before we know we completely write off the suggestion that he's never going to hit the market. But if he has his way, that's what he wants. He wants to stay with the Lightning, and who can blame him? They're a pretty good-looking team for a long time.
he makes a good point there, Pierre LeBrun, speaking on our sister station, TSN 1050 in Toronto. They do look like a pretty good team for a long time.
They do.
You know, there was always talk because, you know, Stamkos, of course, being from the Toronto region and all the ties to going back home, mm-hmm. being the face of the franchise. Given the, you know, given the two situations where both franchises currently stand, can you foresee a way, assuming that the Lightning, for some reason, don't lowball him?
Well, let's look at it this way.
Okay.
Did you foresee a way that LeBron James was going to go back to Cleveland?
I wouldn't have thought so until he did end up going there.
Right. So, and the situation he had in Miami was still pretty good, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, sure, it can happen. Going home, wanting to go home, wanting to go home for reasons, you know, not necessarily known to us. But, hey, I mean, if you want to be the king in Toronto, again, I wouldn't want to go there. It's a disaster. Maybe in a year or two it won't be a disaster. And Steven Stamkos with Don Meehan as his agent wouldn't shock me if he went to UFA status. You wonder, though, if they would, the Tampa Bay Lightning would let him get there. Because they didn't let Martin St. Louis get there. So, you know, then the leverage position that Steven Stamkos is in right now is tremendous because, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs to pay him probably $12 million a year to go play in Toronto.
Sure. Well, right? You know, you look at the salaries around the league, and, I mean, you're talking about, you know, we know Crosby makes, you know, salary cap hits about $8.7 million a year. And you got Taves and Kane. And
somebody would offer Stamkos $12 million.
Oh, I don't doubt that for a second. If he doesn't get 12, if he doesn't get, you know, break the bank and be the highest paid player in the league from Tampa, do you see him going to free agency? And can Tampa afford to take the risk in losing him potentially for nothing like we saw Nashville do with Ryan Suter a couple years back?
That's a really good question. I don't think any team can afford to lose a player of that quality for nothing. So you need to communicate with him and know if will you sign on these terms, and if not, okay, we're going to trade you. You need to do that. I mean, that doesn't happen in 5 minutes. It happens over time.
Sure.
But you need to do that because look what happens when you lose a guy for nothing. Nashville, for example. Look at Jersey and losing Parise for nothing. Look at Ottawa losing Chara for nothing. Sets you back. It's 50 goals out of your lineup.
Yeah.
With nothing to replace it. So, to me, you absolutely have to determine that. Now, if I'm Stamkos and I want to stay in Tampa and I want to win, maybe I take 10 and a half. I take Kane, Taves money. 10 and a half, and I, or 11, and I say, okay, you know, for 8 years, the maximum. And that's what I do. If I want to break the bank, I can probably get more than 12 or around there. So it depends on an interest. Like, you know, what is his interest? Is his interest to win? Because if his interest is to win, you want to take a little bit less money to leave more money under the cap.
Sure.
If his interest,
a cap which is not, by the way, going to go up
right.
with the Canadian dollar struggling, I think, about 12 cents on the U.S. dollar.
Yeah, but if it doesn't, we don't know what it'll be after, not this season, but.
Of course.
Season after, right? That's what we're looking at. That's when it would kick in. But you're looking at it, or is his interest to win? Because if it's to win, you stay in Tampa. And you sign for a pretty good deal, but maybe not as much as you can get. If your interest is to break the bank, then you go to wherever's the highest bidder. And if your interest is to play at home, now, the highest bidder and playing at home may not be mutually exclusive.
Sure.
But then you're going to go home, and Toronto's going to give you a fair market deal. So he has all the leverage. Now, that's, you know, you hate to be in that spot if you're Tampa. You do.
I mean, you're absolutely right.
It's not bad to be in the spot they're at because they're a great team now.
Yeah, they might, probably best case scenario, Tampa makes a long playoff run, maybe gets to the Stanley Cup Finals this year, which is completely in their in their capabilities, and, you know, whether or not they win or not, maybe 7 days later they can start negotiations with
absolutely.
Steven Stamkos, and you say, here's, I mean, what's the link? 7 years of the max you can go now?
And that was eight, seven
maybe
for
it's,
other
maybe,
teams.
Right. It's okay. So here's 8 years and here's $72 million, $9 million a year, or even $80 million, whatever it might be.
Or it'd be at least 10 and a half.
But you mentioned, though, leaving money on the table for...
Leaving money on the table is 10 and a half.
Leaving money on the table is 10 and a half.
Yeah.
So he's, you know, he's Kane and Taves. That's what they're making.
You could argue Steven Stamkos is the best player in the world.
Sure.
You could argue that.
Best goal scorer, I think you can easily argue that.
Yeah.
And he's not, and I mean, as good as he is goal scoring, and that's obviously his best attribute, he's not a one-trick pony.
No.
I mean, he's not like, you know, Alex Ovechkin, who...
Better all-around player.
Better all-around player than Alex Ovechkin, undoubtedly.
Yeah. Those are the two top goal scorers in the league, like pure goal scorers, those two guys.
And it's really, you know, he needs to sit down and have that conversation with...
Donnie Meehan isn't shy to, you know, to lean on the leverage that he has.
No. And if Steven Stamkos and Don Meehan sit down, you know, I guess because the earliest he can sign an extension is July 1st.
So it was January 1. It would have been this past January, I believe.
a year left on his deal. I think he's actually, he's not on a one-year deal, so there wouldn't be a limit to when he can negotiate. I believe he can negotiate now. They're just opting to negotiate after the season for lack of distraction.
You're right. I was wrong. He can negotiate at any point in time. It's if he was on a one, if he had 1 year,
that's right.
If he was on a one-year deal,
like
he would have had to,
that's
like for
right.
a week.
Yeah.
Exactly right. I misspoke there.
Yeah.
But, you know, they have to decide, you know, do you want to, frankly, I mean, why would you want to go to Toronto really at this point in time?
But again,
unless you're the conquering hero coming
home. We're talking now, though. I mean, maybe Toronto does a complete offload of their roster, has a ton of cap space, have a couple of young guys who are ready to go, and maybe, like, I don't think that'll necessarily happen, but you don't need to make that decision now.
No, you don't.
Maybe Mike Babcock goes there.
Sure.
More appealing job, more appealing place. Right now, nobody wants to go there.
No.
But who knows? He doesn't have to make that decision right now.
You know, and how much is it worth to be the conquering hero to go back to your hometown team? And I mean,
well, your life would be different, Drew, in many ways. Your life would be different in the attention that you get.
Well, you wouldn't be able to do anything.
Anything. Whereas in Tampa Bay now, I'm sure he's recognized, but not as much as, say, you know, Darrell Revis was when he was there.
Sure. I mean, you're right. You know, hockey is still
The college sports wins out there.
That's right. Yeah. Tampa
Evan Longoria would get more attention than Stamkos. Although probably not much more.
Not much more, yeah. Given the way Tampa Bay's been playing. I mean, like any city, it's a bandwagon town. When you're the best team in the Eastern Conference, you're going to get a lot of attention,
sure.
a lot of notoriety.
Sure.
But I mean, I can't imagine that $14 million in Tampa, you know, from Toronto, is that much more appealing than $10.5 million a year in Tampa Bay.
But that's a whole different choice, right? Again, I don't know if it's Toronto for the money. It's Toronto for the stature.
Yeah, but I mean. Again, though, it's
everybody
like
thinks they can do it, though. You have to understand.
I know.
Mean, everybody thinks they can go in there and do it.
Sure. It's like when Ken Griffey returned to Cincinnati from Seattle. He was supposed to be the conquering hero going back to his hometown city at that point in time. And then
his
career
body had worn down at that point.
Yeah, but nobody knew that his body had worn down
to
that
yeah.
point.
Yeah, and he was older than now.
And that was a trade also. It wasn't a free agent
signing.
Right,
he kind of forced that trade, if I recall correctly.
Yes,
he was older
did.
Now than when Stamkos is. Was older than when Stamkos is right now, I believe.
Sure, but I mean, you know, if you're Steven Stamkos, I mean... There certainly isn't. I get the appeal of going to Toronto to
but
some extent.
He doesn't necessarily need to be Toronto, Drew.
Well, if he's going to leave Tampa Bay and he's going to go to a... He's not going to a different Canadian franchise than Toronto.
That's true.
And if he's leaving Tampa Bay, what other city has the... You know, has the money that's going to be able to afford him under the cap, given the current situation.
That's fair.
He's not
that's
going
fair.
To go to the Rangers. He can't go to the Rangers. He's not going to the Kings. He's not going to the Blackhawks. You know,
fair.
So maybe to the Florida Panthers make him a god offer, a godfather offer, and he goes from Tampa Bay to Miami.
Yeah,
maybe, but I can't foresee that happening.
Fair enough.
I think it's a function of. I think it's strictly down to between Tampa Bay and Toronto. And now, you know, maybe Don Meehan's going to use the leverage he's got ahead
of course
time.
He will.
He's going to try. He's
going to
take interviews with everybody else. Like,
of course. Now, but that doesn't happen unless he goes to free agency. And if he goes to free agency, you would assume he'd let Tampa know what his intention is before that, whether he wants to re-sign or not, based on their terms.
Right. So, I mean, if he – and that goes back to, you know, if he goes to Tampa Bay, you know, in, you know, next December, and he says, you know what?
That's you're an awful not out long of, time to leave it.
Well, whatever month he picks.
Okay.
You're not out of the running, but I want to see what the market would pay me. Can Tampa Bay, you know – do they have to pull the trigger? And I mean, how much is he?
How hard of a position is that to be? And that's when you get to see how a guy, how managers manage.
Sure. And how much could they get on a form on the, you know, a pure rental possibility? You know,
a lot, but not obviously as much as if you were signed. Obviously, the obvious statement.
You know, what did the Kings get for Gretzky? It's not the exact same situation, but
we're talking about different.
But I mean, it's the best player in the history of hockey.
Theo Fleury, Penny, UFA, Calgary, Colorado. I'm going back some time, but he netted them. What Robin Regier, who's a great, you know, I think one of the first four, one of their four first round picks, which I think was a choice of Tanguay, eventually went there anyways. Tanguay, I think it was Ramzi Abid, and it was Robin Regier. Like they had an option, so I mean, you netted quite a bit. Look at the effect he had. Look at the effect, you know, Newendeck. I'm not sure really how long he was signed for when they got Iginla. So there is you get something, but
sure.
It's not going to be the same value immediately.
It'd be something interesting to watch out for, especially to see how. Steven Stamkos and agent Don Meehan use that leverage. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Daryl Ray, Dallas Stars color analyst. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Alongside my colleague Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. facebook.com/illegalcurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from Fox Sports Southwest, the color analyst on the Dallas Stars broadcast, Daryl Ray. Daryl, good afternoon, and
afternoon.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Daryl, before we get to tonight's game between the Jets and the Stars, I want to look back. Thursday night, Jason Spezza made his return to Ottawa, where he had spent the majority of his career prior to coming to Dallas this offseason. You know, how did you feel he was received? How did you feel the pomp and circumstance around his return was handled in the nation's capital?
Well, I think it was handled well, obviously. And, you know, there was a nice video tribute as they have for every athlete when they come back into their former building. And, you know, there was some question heading into it whether the fans would boo or if they would cheer or whatever. It seemed like it was about 80% cheering. There were some boos early on from some, but for the most part, I think it was a nice hug. We were there for a couple of days. The thing that probably altered a little bit was the fact that the Senators and their media were in Dallas just not too long ago, so they'd already had an opportunity to talk with Jason and write some stories. We went back into Ottawa, and I think Jason was exhausted by the time the game actually came because of all the interviews and friends and touching base, and he looked like a weary guy. He wanted to have a big game. He didn't have that much impact within the game, but the team obviously did, and that's all they were looking for. So good closure, I think, all around for him and the Sens.
On the ice, Daryl, you know, you look at this team, and Lindy Ruff mentioned that they might have been reading their own press clippings earlier in the year. Have you seen a change over the course of the, say, past 20 games in terms of their approach?
Yes. There was some of that. There's no doubt. I mean, they were slathered in anointing oil all summer on this was going to be the, you know, hot team to jump up, you know, from where they finished off last year, where they just snuck into the playoffs. And in a lot of ways, we're fortunate that the then Phoenix Coyotes, now Arizona Coyotes, collapsed down the stretch, and the Stars were able to get in, and they gave Anaheim a pretty good scare in the opening round. But you know, they weren't that much different. Yeah, they'd added, obviously, the offense of Hemsky and Spezza, but defensively, they were the exact same hockey club, and they were going to have to bed in some young guys back there. So they've got their act back together, I think. They still are a club, though, that needs to score a lot of goals to win. I mean, they're second last in the NHL in goals against, and it doesn't feel like it's getting that much better. The difference is they're starting to score more and more consistently, and some guys that were probably getting adjusted to how Lindy Ruff wanted things to go, some newcomers, and some guys that maybe did what you said, read too much into what they did last season, have played more up to their potential here over the last 20 games or so.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Dallas Stars color analyst Daryl Ray. Daryl, Sean Horkoff has been playing with Jason Spezza and Alex Hemsky as of recently. Bit of a different role, expecting maybe more scoring out of him than they had been than the role he'd been filling earlier in the season. How have you seen him fitting in with Spezza and Hemsky?
Pretty good, actually. You know, prior to Eric Cole getting injured, that was kind of, or had become, his spot. And, you know, Sean's always lobbied really most of last year, his first year with the Stars, and then he had a great playoff. And then early this year lobbied to give him a shot up top, whether it was with Spezza and Hemsky or with Sagan and Ben. And he's really made the most of it. He's had a good season. He's been very productive on the road. It'll be interesting. You know, for the most part, Lindy Ruff has tried to run a four-line team, so They look for some balance with their lines at even strength. Obviously, special teams messes that up a little bit, but he's looked like a pretty good fit there. You know, he can take some face-offs for Spezza on the other side of the ice, and he gives them a guy that will go to the net. And it seems like that's what they need more than anything else. You know, Jason plays away from the net. Alex Hemsky, for the most part, is a perimeter player, so getting someone that'll consistently go to the front of the net is a big key for those other two.
Do
Darryl, you know, we were talking Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette last week about Sergei Gonchar and his effect in Montreal, and we know that there's contract rationale behind that trade for Travis Moen, and of course it's afforded Dallas to see some of their young defensemen, which I'll ask you about in a few minutes here. How has Travis Moen, though, worked out so far in Dallas?
Really good, actually. You know, if you just looked at stats, you'd scratch your head maybe a little bit. He didn't have a point when he was with Montreal, and he didn't register a point in, I think, his first 10 or 11 games with the Stars. But that's not really what he's going to be all about. He gives them a veteran guy who's won, who's safe with the puck. They got a lot of guys that are pretty high risk with the puck. He's safe. He's good along the boards. He's a good teammate. And that line has played well. They go out there. He and Vern Fiddler have played well together. It's been a myriad of different guys that have played on the line with them on the so-called fourth line, but they do play quite a bit. And they eat up a lot of ice in the attacking zone. So he's been a pretty good fit for what they were looking for. And yeah, you nailed it. They were looking to get rid of a contract too and open up some space for some young guys on D, and it never really worked, and it didn't feel like it was going to work with Sergei in Dallas. So good fit in Montreal, and Travis has been a very good add in Dallas.
Darryl Ray is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Darryl is the Dallas Stars color analyst on Fox Sports Southwest. Darryl, we know his brother. We've seen his brother up here a little bit. That's John Klingberg, his brother Carl, member of the St. John's Ice Caps. How impressed have you been with the play of defenseman John Klingberg on the Stars' back end?
Very. we were just talking, I was talking with John this morning about his brother, and he was kind of hoping with Gagliardi being waived that maybe his brother would be coming up, because they haven't had a chance to play against one another. They would have in the Calder Cup final last year, but, sure. John was injured. He had the hip surgery. So he has been... you don't want to push him too far down the road, but he has essentially been what they haven't had since Sergei Zubov was in Dallas, in a real bright, elite offensive defenseman. And, I challenge you to find a better rookie D-man in the Western Conference, and I know Ekblad's been terrific in Florida, but this guy's been something else. He's defended well. He scored goals and beautiful goals, jumping up on the attack. He's so smart. They put him back on the power play again, the number one unit, to give him another shot at that. And, he's just scratching the surface. He hasn't been able to work out for two summers because of the hip problems he's had. He hasn't really had an awful lot of stability because he's bounced around amongst teams over his last four or five seasons. So, I don't know. The sky seems to be the limit for this guy.
Darryl, you look at the third line of the Stars. We've talked about the second line and the fourth line. Third line, Cody Eakin and Ryan Garbutt, two Winnipeggers, and of course Antoine Roussel, who's a rugged player. I like that third line a lot, actually. Can you talk about the Winnipeggers, for the listening audience, how Cody Eakin and Ryan Garbutt have acquitted themselves so far?
Yeah, that line was, they're a pet peeve line of Lindy Ruff's. He loves them. And you can understand why, because they truly can turn a game. All three of them are just a pest to play against for top lines, and he can match them against top lines because they can all skate. They're a very good defensive trio when they're playing well. At the beginning of the year, they probably would have epitomized what we talked about off the top, which was reading clippings or believing the hype or whatever you want. Cody missed most of training camp, had a slow start, had some nagging injuries. Ryan Garbutt, between injuries and suspensions, an uneven first half of the season for him. Roussel's been terrific again this year. 11 goals and 11 assists from that point in the lineup is pretty impressive, and the other stuff. So they're fun to watch. They're great to have on your team, but they annoy the heck out of the opposition, and you can see it game in and game out. I think Cody's playing his best hockey this season right now.
Daryl Ray is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Daryl's a color analyst for the Dallas Stars on Fox Sports Southwest. Daryl, it's amazing. You know, we're about six, seven questions into the interview. We really haven't asked about Jamie Benn or Tyler Seguin so far. Jamie Benn, 5 goals in his last 5 games, 9 points in his last 5 games. You know, as we get into the sort of the latter half of the regular season and the Stars are battling to try and get back into a playoff position, is he starting to take his play to the next level?
He's playing probably his best hockey of the season right now. He's had to deal with a nagging ailment too that probably the All-Star break helped immensely, helped him get a little downtime, and he's come back and been excellent out of the break. And you know, he's not unlike a guy like Jerome McGinley. He admits it. He's a bit of a slow starter, and it takes him a little while to get going. He was phenomenal in the Olympics last year, and maybe even better out of that in almost willing the Stars into the playoffs last year. Yeah. Offensively, lately here, I think he's benefited a little bit from teams overplaying Seguin and trying to take him away, so it's obviously opened some things up for Jamie Benn. But for my money, he hasn't played as well as he did last year, most of this year, but he is right now.
You look at Jim Neal, the GM of the Dallas Stars, and he comes from Detroit, where they've been seemingly trying to find a right-handed offensive defenseman for some time, Daryl. And, of course, John Klingberg comes up from the AHL, and then Jim Neal goes out and he trades Brendan Dillon, you know, a solid stay-at-home guy, for Jason Demers from San Jose, a guy who can move the puck. How has Demers helped the transition game?
Well, exactly that, right? I mean, the Stars came into the season with 8 left-handed defensemen. And when you are playing in this league now and you look at teams, you know, the Jets would be a good example. There's others where it's righty-lefty most of the time. The ability to move the puck out of your own zone and transition cleaner, there's no substitute for that. There's just not enough time anymore. There's too much pressure from forward. So, you know, getting Klingberg up here and then making that deal, and believe me, everyone liked Brendan Dillon, but it was just one of those. They were looking for a lefty and maybe a little more size on their blue line. Stars were just looking for a pure puck mover and a right shot, and it's one of those deals that probably helps both teams. And I think Demers, the way he goes about his business, the type of guy he is, fits pretty good with this group, too. You know, he likes to have some fun. He's a go-getter. He's a gamer, and he's been a terrific fit.
Final question for you, Daryl. So I'm sitting in my office yesterday, and I call my buddy Neil to talk about, you know, what's happening on the weekend. He says, I got to tell you, I was just at Shoppers Drug Mart in Winnipeg Square, and I recognized Daryl Ray. So I went up to him. I introduced myself to him. So how surprised were you that Neil recognized you underground in Winnipeg, and was he really as nice as he said he was?
I'm shocked when I get noticed in my own household nowadays, because we're never home. But yeah, it is. It's always flattering, and it's very bizarre when somebody comes up to you, you know, whether it's down in Dallas or up here in Canada, where there's a little more focus on the sport. But he was very nice. He didn't ask for a selfie with them. I was a little offended by that. But he was a super nice guy and said wonderful things about the way I do my job.
I can tell you he's been saying that to me off air for many years, so it's all truth.
Daryl Ray covers the Dallas Stars. He's a color analyst for Fox Sports Southwest. Daryl, appreciate your time this afternoon. Enjoy tonight's game, and we'll see you up in the press box.
Yep, my pleasure.
Thanks, Daryl. Take care. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll go around the league with some NHL news and notes.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Daryl Ray, Dallas Stars color analyst, for joining us on the program to talk about tonight's Jets-Stars game at MTS Center. 6 p.m. puck drop between the Jets and the Stars. You can hear it on TSN 1290. 90, Bayak, Edmonds.
Did you say 1290?
I said 1290, and then I said 90, so I can understand how it sounded, that the two words would be mashed together.
Sounded like 1290 to me.
Well, let's be honest. If they changed the station to TSN 1290, would that be a bad thing?
No, it might not be.
No, I'm in favor of TSN 1290. In fact, I think I just gave us a new marketing campaign. Anyways, let's go around the NHL with some NHL news and notes for this Saturday afternoon. The Pittsburgh Penguins acquired Maxime Lapierre from the St. Louis Blues in exchange for Marcel Gauthier. This happened on Tuesday, really right after the Jets and the Penguins game
while we were
ended.
On the air.
Yeah, like literally seconds after is, I think, when the trade was officially announced. Your thoughts on this trade? You know, the Penguins obviously get they get an irritant in Lapierre, and that's probably the nicest word I can use for him.
Well, Drew, I mean, he's going to be more of a skating guy than Marcel Gauthier. Gauthier is going to be a little more trustworthy in his own zone and dependable along the boards and things like that. Maybe he won't play as quickly. So, you know, as Darren and I were talking about in post game on Tuesday when the trade happened, Gauthier is really your St. Louis type of guy.
Sure,
big, you know, like not huge, but like built pretty tough, good along the boards, good in his own zone, takes care of the defensive areas, can take a draw if you need him to. And will play within that style of St. Louis, right? Isn't he a Ken Hitchcock type of guy? And then you look at Pittsburgh, well, they have Steve Downey, so they're not averse to controversial figures
right.
who can move around a bit, and Lapierre will run around, and you know he can be a distraction to his own teammates, but he can be a distraction to your team. And he just a different element there. They want to go with a little more speed. They want to play fast. And discipline is an issue, but I don't mind it. I think it fits both teams. I don't like, again, you know how I feel about Max and Lapierre, but I understand the move from both perspectives.
Sure, he certainly has a reputation of being a bit of a dirty player and a cheap shot artist.
Well, again, that's Steve Downey, right? Is that the same description?
Downey's
more offensively talented.
Right, at the very least, when you play Pittsburgh, you're going to have to keep your head on a swivel, for better or worse. But, I mean, you know, there's going to be, you take any liberties with Malkin or Crosby, like we sort of saw the reputation was last year.
Fair enough, Drew, but is Lapierre going to come in and beat somebody up? I think it's going to be more so just like causing trouble.
Yeah, it's just going to be causing trouble. But I mean, I think there is some sort of residual effect to when he causes trouble and when Downey causes trouble a little bit.
Fair enough.
You know, you can try and agitate some teams maybe and get them off their game a little bit.
For sure.
We got this audio from TSN 1050 in Toronto, courtesy Bob McKenzie, discussing the Toronto Maple Leafs general manager situation.
There's always been speculation about the future of Nonis and whether he's Shanahan's guy and what he's going to do here. When Mark Hunter got hired, I think there was a widespread presumption that he could be a general manager in waiting if and when Brendan Shanahan makes a move to terminate or put Dave Nonis out to pasture, whatever the case may be. But I've also heard over the course of time that Brendan Shanahan's first choice, if he would hire a general manager other than Dave Nonis, would be Rob Blake, who worked with Shanahan at Player Safety and now, of course, works for the Los Angeles Kings under the Di Lombardi regime. I personally don't think Rob Blake has any interest in leaving Southern California. He's a surfer. He likes working with the Kings. And as much as maybe one day he wants to be a general manager, I'd be absolutely shocked if he wants to do it in Toronto, even though he's from good old Simcoe, Ontario. So that's number one. Number two, you know, could it be Hunter if it's not Rob Blake? I suppose it could. Maybe there are some other people with more experience at Brendan Shanahan would consider. I don't know that he's necessarily tipped his hand on that.
We'll talk about the Mark Hunter aspect in a couple of minutes.
Just fire Dave Nonis. What are you doing? It's ridiculous. I mean, it's Brendan Shanahan, who I respect for, doesn't want the heat on him, so he's just holding Nonis out there.
Same as
Carlo. I should have fired him before the season because you were going to fire him anyways. You fired him when you were in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Scoring a lot to now.
What heat at this point in time in this season is there on... They could do anything at this point. What heat is there? It's hard to believe.
Well, somebody's got to make a decision, Drew.
I agree.
You can't blame it on anybody if you're the one making it.
Fair enough. I understand that point in time. But then, I mean, are you letting him make those decisions right now, or is he just the face of the decision? Regardless.
That's a heck of a question. I like to know that.
Yeah, and I mean, and I had Michael Trakos on Wednesday, and I asked him that question, who's making the decisions? And this is a guy who covers the team on a daily basis for the National Post.
He doesn't know.
He said, we have no idea.
No idea.
And that just speaks about how, you know... How much of a...
just fire Nonis already, though.
You know, I mean, how much of a cluster bleep there is in Toronto right now. Let's talk about Rob Blake potentially as the general manager.
Why does he want that job? Well, I mean, Rob Blake is a pretty chill guy. Bob McKenzie alluded to it. But I also think Rob Blake doesn't have enough experience for that job right now. No.
Yeah.
That has not, you know... Brendan Shanahan isn't that experienced in management role. I don't think you want... And I know Rob Blake's working with the Kings and such, but he was with the NHL... When him and Shanahan were working together, I think at the same time or shortly thereafter, one another. I just don't think you want two inexperienced guys. Don't get me wrong, these guys know the game, but you don't want two inexperienced guys running a franchise with that much attention on it at all times.
And I don't really understand. I know that at some point in time, everybody's inexperienced, and somebody has to take a chance on a general manager at some point.
No.
But you look at, like, why do you want to take a young guy who hasn't really put in his time?
Well, I mean, it depends on what you think. If you think he's the guy,
he's a savant. I mean, what has Rob Blake really done that says?
Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. He might be very, very, very strong at identifying talent. He might do a bunch of things. I just think that it would be surprising to have two guys who don't have a ton of front office experience running the show.
Sure, I agree.
Now
with
you
that.
You can supplement that lack of experience with guys around him who have the experience, but I just feel like Rob Blake would want to put a few more years in L.A. at the pace he's doing it at before he makes that move. And will that move be to Toronto based on what Bob McKenzie's saying? And I would tend to agree with him. It wouldn't be.
I think there's a sort of a pattern or a trend, at least currently. And it'll end because all trends tend to, or all fads tend to. That, you know, you're always better off hiring the new hot candidate as opposed to a veteran guy who's put in his time.
Depends on the situation, Drew. I don't like Brad Treliving put in his time.
Right, and that's why I think it's a good hire.
But he's not a recycled guy.
No, but he put in his time, and Jim Neal was not a recycled guy either.
Right.
But he put in his time.
Yeah. Jim Benning, same thing. Trend, isn't it? It's long-time executives who put their time in.
I don't know. Some organizations, I think, tend to always look for the flash-in-the-pan guy, maybe a little too often, when the best candidate might be the guy who's a little bit down the road, a little bit under the radar. Anyways, we're neither here nor there in regards to that, but I think we're in agreement.
Tim Murray, I don't know. I think the trend has been experience hockey guys taking the next step.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. It wouldn't be the first time on this program.
This is true.
Or in real life, or really any point. New York Islanders lose Kyle Okposo.
Yeah, big loss.
6 to 8 weeks with an upper body injury.
They can withstand it, though. I mean, he's a top line winger here, but let's be honest. I mean, this team's got offensive depth. Very dangerous. And they have guys who can step into those roles and not play at the same talent level and not perform the same that Okposo can.
Sure.
But even so, I mean, scoring is not an issue with that team. Boy, they can skate and move the puck real well.
Yeah.
And if John Tavares has to take a little more of the burden for, you know, that month and a half or so, then I think he's able to. They're clearly a playoff team now.
Right.
That's not a question.
No.
And so it's just a matter of where they go in the standings. And as long as Okposo is back for the playoffs, I think that's all the Islanders really care about.
Yeah, Islanders currently first in the Metropolitan Division with 65 points.
So fun to watch. You're a hockey fan. Turn them on. Yeah. They are fun to watch.
And, I mean, I don't know if you caught it. Did you catch any of the Islanders-Rangers game from earlier this week?
Yeah, it was on in the studio when we were doing the
Tuesday night.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this is the last year in the Nassau County Coliseum.
Yes, I know.
And when that building gets rocking.
Oh, I know.
I mean,
Arthur Sable didn't seem to discount the fact that it's possible down the road they go to Brooklyn, they tear down, and they come back to the island.
But sure.
Seems like that would be nice because fans deserve it.
That's right. And, it's unlikely that they're going to take the train into Brooklyn to see the games.
Some people think they're going to, but
on a regular basis all the time, I'm skeptical.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, it's not a difficult train ride, but it's
20 minutes or 25 minutes, but it's different than just being close to home.
That's right. It's different than being close to home. Looks like Grabowski's going to be taking his spot.
And that'll switch, Drew. That'll change, I'm sure. You know, again, that's what I talked about earlier in the show. Wingers who can play center, centers who can play the wing there.
Yeah.
Not an issue, right? I mean, look at it. Nelson can play center wing. Grabowski can play center wing. Josh Bailey can play center wing. Ryan Strome can play center wing. A lot of talent. A lot of flexibility.
Still a lot of talent still to come up in the ranks of the Islanders as well. So this isn't a, you know, obviously.
I don't love Griffin Reinhardt, but yeah, there's some good talent still.
You think, yeah. Okay.
I don't love Griffin Reinhardt, yeah.
The AHL, they announced the formation of a brand new Pacific Division earlier this week, and it's a 5-team division. They're all based in California.
I think it's very cool.
I think it's a very good idea.
To be honest, what that demonstrates is the progress that hockey has made in California since the Gretzky trade.
Sure.
Really.
I mean, it's, you know.
And not to discredit Marcel Dion, Dave Taylor, the guys, Charlie Simmer, the guys before him.
Yeah.
But we know Gretzky and the effect he had, and then Solani, Kareem, and those guys as well.
Well, in almost 30 years.
San Jose.
You know, it'll be 30 years coming up in a couple more years. I mean, you're managing to put 5 AHL franchises in California.
Now, will they succeed is another question.
Well, that's...
You have to assume there's been some market testing and such.
You have to assume. I mean, the Anaheim Ducks, their new AHL affiliate is going to be in San Diego. The Calgary Flames, their new AHL affiliate, is going to be in Stockton, California.
Mm-hmm.
The Edmonton Oilers, they're going to be in Bakersfield, California. The Los Angeles Kings are going to be in Ontario, California. And the San Jose Sharks are actually going to be in San Jose, California, which I find to be very unique. yeah. in that they're going to be, they feel the San Jose market is obviously, hockey ready enough to
I
have
I always wonder
teams.
About that. Like, I think that's a lot of teams, but I think it says a lot about the way California has gone in terms of hockey and the growth of the game.
Wow.
And you go to a game down there, and I've been to a game the past 2 years, one in L.A., one in Anaheim, and you know, both packed arenas, passionate fans, jerseys, the whole deal. So if you think that the fans haven't taken to it, you're wrong.
Yeah.
They have, and they're knowledgeable. Manhattan Beach is like a huge hockey haven there.
Sure.
In L.A., yeah.
Apparently, two other cities on the as potential AHL markets include Prescott, Arizona, which would, of course, make sense for the Coyotes. Assuming the Coyotes are still in Arizona for...
Let's worry about having an NHL team first.
That's fine. Yeah. And Boise, Idaho, which is another rumored market for...
We need to qualify all this by saying the AHL teams are pretty often hop around quite a bit.
They do often move around quite
Abbotsford
a bit.
And different stuff like that, right?
So. That's right. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out and, the Jets obviously still in St. John's, and you haven't really heard anything about the development of the arena in Thunder Bay.
I haven't heard anything.
You haven't heard anything since that first...
St. John's is supporting it so well, and I don't think support's an issue in St. John's. It's the travel that's the issue.
That's right. Yeah. If there's, I'm sure the Jets would be happy. Look at TJ Gagliardi. We don't know if he left Winnipeg.
Right.
But, he sent down on waivers and then called back up. Now, the Jets, obviously, you hope he never actually flew out to St. John's, or maybe just made it as far as Toronto and came back. But otherwise, you're talking a guy who's been on the plane for, 8 hours in the last 20 hours?
It's very Rick Ralph of you to talk about this. Like, that's a Rick Ralph topic.
Well, Rick is my spirit monkey.
Yeah, that's a Rick Ralph topic. I wonder if he flew out. If he flew out, did he turn around? Did he...
I model myself after Rick Ralph. He's on vacation.
We miss Rick. Yeah,
we
of course.
When's he back from vacation?
I think on Monday or Sunday,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll have a welcome home Rick party.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's head to break at this point in time. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we're going to head out to Vancouver and be joined by Jim Jameson of the Vancouver province to talk about the Canucks.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
2:30 in the afternoon, a beautiful sunny day here in downtown Winnipeg. We're at Boston Pizza City Place. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Vancouver province, Jim Jameson. Jim, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, not at all, guys. Always a pleasure.
Jim, the Canucks are sort of an interesting case. We weren't sure what to expect from them this year, given the trials and tribulations of last season. They're currently in the playoffs in the Western Conference. What is the mood in Vancouver? What are the expectations for this team in the dressing room after the good start to the season?
Well, it's been pretty somber in the last 4 to 6 weeks, I would say, and particularly in the last couple of weeks. The team is, as you may recall, got off to a tremendous start, a start that really none of us saw coming from a team that, that had a, significant number of changes and a lot of question marks, guys coming off bad seasons last year. And, really, if you look back to, early December, they were, when they beat Pittsburgh, they were tied for the top of the league, but since then it's been a real challenge. I mean, in the last 4 to 6 weeks, if you look at the last 21 games, I was just looking at the stats after last night's win over Buffalo. They're 9-10-2 in their last 21, and of course that's not going to get it done. And it's just so many guys have gone into offensive slumps. The power play's been in a slump. The only good news is that Ryan Miller's, since the middle of December, has been terrific. So that's kind of, for the games that they have been able to, come out with points, it's been often due to him.
Jim, we haven't seen much of the Canucks this year, Winnipeg fans, at least me. I haven't seen a lot of the Canucks, on TV. You see him a bit, and you see Willie Desjardins behind the bench, always moving around, never really able to sit still. How would you describe his coaching style?
Willie, as a first-year head coach in the NHL, I think he came in, trying to give everybody right in training camp a clean slate because, obviously they had a very tough year. A lot of individual players, team missed the playoffs for the first time in quite a while. I think he is a player's coach. I think that's kind of his profile. And, you know, he came in and was very, very kind of loyal to guys and, you know, wasn't quick to make changes if things weren't working and sort of stuck with guys. And I think the players appreciated that. And, you know, I think, you know, as we got into, you know, say 2 months or so of the season, he started to do some tinkering. I mean, I remember talking to Chris Higgins actually last, you know, a couple of months ago, and Chris was starting a slump, which became in huge proportions, which he actually scored a goal last night for the first time in a long, long time. But Chris was saying he had never been on an NHL team where the coach had been so patient with lines and sort of defense pairs and deployment. But, you know, now, you know, Willie is sort of, you know, he sort of felt his way through it. I think he feels pretty comfortable now. And you know, he is critical of players, which you wouldn't see him do the first couple months of the season. He was very careful not to be critical of anybody, you know, in the media. And you know, it's kind of nice to see because, I mean, that players have to be accountable and they have to be able to, you know, to deal with, public criticism, and sometimes it can be an incentive. It can be, it can bring better performances out of guys. But you know, I think Willie came in, and I think he was dealt, you know, a tough hand. And I mean, this is the team that I think most of us thought in the summer was going to be a team after all the moves that would scramble for a playoff spot, but wasn't going to be a top team. And I think that start kind of was a mirage. It's shown to be a mirage now. And I think Willie knows he's in for a tough haul here to get this team in the playoffs. And he's just trying to get the best out of what he's got.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Jim Jamieson from the Vancouver province. He covers the Canucks, of course. Jim, I think the Sedins are taking this Twins thing a little bit too far at this point. Both have 9 goals, both have 31 assists, and both have played 47 games. How would you rate their play this season, aside from very coincidental?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's, you know, having covered the Sedins for quite a number of years, that doesn't surprise me. It's almost eerie the way that everything seems to match up. The only difference is maybe one has played 10 seconds more ice time per season on
yeah, exactly.
Season, but that's about the only difference you can really find. But yeah, you know, this year the Sedins, you know, have been under some criticism when the team goes into scoring droughts and you know, gets into stretches where they're not winning. Because Ryan Miller can't do it all. And, you know, I think that they have been, guys that I think they're in a tough situation. I mean, optically it's tough. They're very popular in Vancouver, as I'm sure you know. It's tough because they're on this $7 million mm-hmm. per year deal each. And, you know, this deal was signed, you know, after they'd come off a 5-year deal where they were grossly underpaid. And you know how it works. I mean, sometimes guys get signed for less, they get take a hometown discount, the next contract they say, well, we're not doing that anymore, and then of course they're past their prime. So it's kind of a weird, you know, cap system kind of phenomenon that you see, that sometimes guys that actually are past their prime are making more money than they were when they're in their prime.
Yeah.
There's that. And you know, they are 34. And they no longer can carry the team by themselves. And this team does not have, in the first couple of months, they had some surprising secondary scoring, and that's why they were being successful. But when the secondary scoring died up, as, you know, I think it was inevitable it was going to, they struggled too. I mean, it's tough to be a one line team because when you cut down the one line, not much else happens. And that's what's sort of been the struggle here the last 20-21 games. Now, the other thing is that, you know, they are at 34. They're still very good players. And on the power play has really struggled of late. They got a couple last night against Buffalo, which of course against Buffalo that's an asterisk.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
You know, the thing is, if you examine their statistics in terms of their scoring, their even strength scoring is down quite disturbingly this season. I mean, and so, you know, they're on pace for 70 some points this year, which if you look at it in isolation, that's pretty good, you know, 70 points each. But and for guys who are 34, but their even strength scoring is down quite a bit. A lot of that's power play, you know, production. And So, I mean, I think they're still pretty good players. They're having, a reasonably good year, I would argue. But they're just not the game breakers that they were, especially even strength.
Hey, Jim, we talk about the forwards and the Sedins you mentioned there. Kevin Bieksa, of course, now facing this injury. How is the team going to be able to fare? Already have a little bit, but how are they going to be able to fare in terms of this playoff race without Bieksa?
It's going to be difficult. Kevin is an interesting case. I mean, he's a guy who, if he's listening, he's probably going to be angry when I say that he's a guy of modest talents. He's a decent player. He plays big minutes, but he's one of these guys he wears his heart in his sleeves, very emotional. He brings a lot of emotion to the game, a lot of passion, and it rubs off. And, without him in there, and the Canucks are also without Derek Dorsett, who's, first year with the team, but it's been a great asset in that regard. He's a real, real heart and soul player and a lot of fire to the game. Lots of abrasiveness, just like BX. And they're also missing Brad Richardson, the third line center, who's, of that same kind of profile. And that's really showing that they just don't have the spark that they had with those guys in the lineup. And, the latter two are going to be back, I think, quite soon. But, Kevin's out until, he's gone 6 to 8 weeks with this fractured hand. It's quite a nasty fracture, required surgery to fix it, and so it's he'll be out for quite a while. And I don't know how they're going to adjust. It's like the old cliche: they're going to have other guys step up in that role. But sometimes that's easier said than done. Mm-hmm.
Our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is Jim Jamieson from the Vancouver Province, discussing the Canucks, the Jets, and the Canucks Tuesday night in Vancouver. Jim, Chris Tanev, sticking on the back end, he's an RFA at season's end. How do you have contract negotiations commenced between Tanev's representatives and the Canucks, and how do you think those negotiations will unfold?
Well, they have begun. I did a story last week. Tanev has changed agents to Newport Sports, so it's a well-known, Don Meehan's the one who started that, and he's working with Wade Arnott, Newport, and Wade has had an initial discussion with Jim Benning, the exchange.
Looks like we may have lost Jim there, having a bad cell phone connection, so we'll try and get back in touch with him. But the Canucks are an interesting challenge for the Jets upcoming on Tuesday night, Richard.
Well, and Jim's really talking about it in terms of what the Canucks bring to the table, and that even strength is going to be an issue and something you would hope the Jets can take advantage of. If you're a Jets fan, we got Jim back.
Jim, you're back?
Yeah, sorry about that. My cell is a bit flaky today. My apologies.
No worries whatsoever.
Yeah, you were asking me about Chris Tanev. So you want me to start from the beginning?
Sure.
What I was going to say was I did a piece last week in the paper about how the negotiations have begun with his new representative at Port Sports, Wade Arnott, in a Toronto-based agency. And they had an initial discussion, he and Jim Benning, when Benning was back east doing some scouting. Early days, talked about, some general concepts and, their positions, et cetera, et cetera. I see this negotiation going right down to the wire. I don't see them signing Tanev, next month or whatever. I mean, there's no rush. He's an RFA. They really like him. It's interesting. Jim Benning said last summer when he came into the organization, being somewhat familiar with the personnel, but not, as familiar as he would like to be, them being in the Western Conference, doesn't see these guys play all that much when he was in Boston. He was, made kind of a lukewarm comment about Tanev when he was asked about Tanev and actually signed Tanev to a $2 million deal that one-year deal that their side wasn't too thrilled with. They were looking for a multi-year deal. Benning said, well, he's a, we don't really know enough about him. We need to see more of a body of work. And, if he has a good year, we understand he, had a kind of a breakout year this year, but if he has another good year, then we'd look to re-sign to a multi-year deal. Now, what's happened is he's had another breakout year. Mm-hmm. I mean, last year he showed that he could play very capably in a top four role as a defenseman. This year he's played almost from the start of the year as a top two defenseman with Alex Edler, and many would argue, including myself, that a big factor, the reason why Alex Edler's had
a big bounce back year, because Tanev is a guy that even when he was a rookie breaking in the league, played with Keith Ballard and actually settled Keith Ballard down, if you can believe that. So, it was really he's a guy that he plays such a steady, smart game, but he really, the guys who played with Ham Hughes last year, Ham Hughes ended up in the Canadian Olympics. And Dan's a really good player. I'm not saying that's why, but it's just that problem to it. Now with Tanev, the problem he's always had with contracts at the pro level is that he doesn't produce a lot of points.
Right.
And typically, if you're a D-man, if you produce points, you get paid for it. If you're a guy who is just really good at shutting down the opposition, getting puck out of your own zone, really good in your own end, it's not as sexy a profile. So you don't get as much money, and that's what he's sort of up against.
Jim Jamieson covers the Vancouver Canucks for the Vancouver Province. Jim, always appreciate your time, and thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Anytime, guys. Always a pleasure.
Appreciate it, Jim. Let's head to break. When we come back, one final segment, rapid fire, cheers and jeers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment on this Saturday afternoon, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. Earlier in the show, Richard had this to say about Dallas Stars rookie defenseman John Klingberg.
John Klingberg is really the guy I think fans should sort of pay attention to on the Stars' back end, given how well he played when the Jets played there in Dallas a couple weeks ago.
He reminds
of Carl Klingberg, of course, Jets prospect.
Carl Klingberg, Drew, sort of interrupt there, and also reminds some of Sergei Zubov. That's high praise. I think Sergei Zubov is a tremendous defenseman. But, you know, he's not going to be the most dynamic skater, but he reads the play really well. The puck goes to where it needs to go, and it goes there with ease, and that certainly helps his squad.
Richard on John Klingberg comparing him to Sergei Zubov.
You guys are embarrassing me.
Here's Dallas Stars color analyst Daryl Ray in the last hour on John Klingberg.
You know, you don't want to push him too far down the road, but he has essentially been what they haven't had since Sergei Zubov was in Dallas, in a real bright, elite offensive defenseman.
All of this is a long and convoluted way of saying my colleague Richard Pollock seems to know what he's talking about, despite all appearances to the contrary.
Yeah, you guys are ambushing me here.
We're not ambushing. You asked for this. You said...
Oh, yeah, right.
You demanded this, in fact, if I recall correctly.
Oh, God.
Anyways, Remo, let's finish the show with Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
We start Rapid Fire for this Saturday afternoon with this week's edition of Leafs and Freuda, which is a version of Schadenfreude.
Those missing those blocked, 50 attempts at goal for Arizona, 31 for the Maple Leafs. However, the old formula is working. They've gotten great goaltending from Jonathan Bernier. Scores! Oh, no! All away from out at center. Take that back. It is from the blue line.
The Arizona blue line. They win the draw back to the...
Ekman Larson who puts it in the net. Oh, my. It's a shorthanded goal.
The shorthanded goal on top of it. There's Joe Bowen on the Leafs broadcast after Oliver Ekman Larson scores on Jonathan Bernier from the Coyotes' own blue line.
When describing the whole season, the Toronto fans just have to play that clip.
Yeah, that's
the whole season right there.
That's right. We can stop all of the analysis on the Leafs for the rest of the year.
Play that clip.
It's praising Jonathan Bernier for his good goaltending, and then he gives up a goal from the opposition's blue line. You know, which goal is worse? The one that Bernier gave up or the one that Vesa Toskala gave up in Long Island a few years ago?
I think it's Toskala's because, if I recall correctly, Toskala's was actually from behind the goal line of the Islanders.
It was on
Long Island, and it was a dump from all the way in the other teams, like deeper than the blue line. And he like saw it coming, it bounced, and he tried to play it, and he totally missed it. This one was a little bit faster, off the faceoff. I'm going to say Toskos is still worse.
But it's a hell of a competition there when you really think about it. Earlier this week, Radek Dvorak retired after playing 1,260 NHL games in 18 seasons. He's a former first-round pick, 10th overall in 1995. He played for the Florida Panthers, the New York Rangers, the Edmonton Oilers, the St. Louis Blues, the Atlanta Thrashers, the Dallas Stars, the Anaheim Ducks, and the Carolina Hurricanes. Richard, and we'll invite Remus to chime in on this as well, because he's been begging us for it all show long,
yeah.
Really. Richard, what is your most profound moment of the Radek-Dvorak era in the NHL?
Well, I think it has to be his blip. If you remember, that's probably the early 2000s, I think it is. Yeah, it would be the early 2000s. The run of Nedved, Hlavic, and Dvorak. That line. It's a great line in the early 2000s. I mean, I had a few hockey pools then, and I think I had the whole line 1 year.
You cleaned up?
Well, I mean, the thing about that line was, Drew, you had Hlavic and you had Dvorak. Both could skate.
Hlavic, right?
Yeah, Jan Hlavic and Dvorak. Both could skate. I mean, they weren't exactly the best hands in the world.
Yeah.
But they could motor. And then you had Peter Nedved, who apparently is still playing. Like, didn't he play in the Olympics last time?
I think he did.
He had a great wrist shot. Let's try to talk about the old players. Remus, what do you remember about him, aside from his NHL rating?
You forgot to say the name of that line, the checkmate line.
That's right. Sorry, the checkmate line.
I just wanted to add that in. But he was also very good for the Oilers in their cup run of 2006.
He was, yes.
He traded Anson Carter for him, but he was very good for the Oilers, and that's all I have to add.
That's what you waited all show desperately asking us to participate in this question to add that?
I wanted to say the checkmate line, and I got that in.
Anson Carter they got for Bill Guerin, I believe, the Oilers.
That was the first trade, yes.
And Bill Guerin they got for Jason Arnott. Yeah.
Yes.
So say they're always used to turn them into different younger talented players.
Alrighty. Colin Greening was placed on waivers on Tuesday by the Ottawa Senators. The forward, who was in the final year of a 3-year $7.95 million contract, has been a healthy scratch since January 8th.
Yep.
Given that Greening had a 17-goal season in 2011-12 and played nearly 16 minutes per playoff game for the Senators in their 2013 playoff run, are you surprised that he went unclaimed?
It's a lot of money for a fourth-line guy.
Contract's up at the end of the year.
Still a lot of money. I mean, the cap world.
Yeah, but, I mean, how much? I mean, you're talking about less than half a year.
Yeah, still. I mean, if you're going to spend the money on what? What's that, 2.5 a year?
Yeah, a little bit more than 2.5 per year.
For your fourth line left winger. And I like Colin Greening is built like a truck. But, I mean, he's not going to add you a ton offensively. And I did like him before. He's faded away a bit now. But you can't pay a fourth line guy $2.5 million. Your fourth line combined probably should make $2.5 million.
Final question for Rapid Fire before we head to cheers and jeers. The Vancouver Canucks acquired defenseman Adam Clendenning from the Blackhawks in exchange for defenseman Gustav Forsling. Clendenning was a 2011 second-round pick of the Blackhawks. Twice has been selected to the AHL All-Star Game. Forsling was a 2014 fifth-round pick of the Canucks, who played for Sweden at this year's World Juniors Tournament. Are you surprised the Blackhawks traded away Clendenning, despite his AHL All-Star pedigree and the fact he's played four games for the Hawks already this season?
I don't really know, to be honest, and I think that's the thing. I've seen him play a partial game. I don't know enough about him. If they are trading him, considering that back end, Roosevelt and Rundblad, so it clearly, to me, it would indicate, not clearly, but it may indicate to me that David Rundblad, a guy who's a puck mover as well, may be somebody that they value more. Because the truth is, Keith, they got to pay Seabrook, but they have Keith long-term, Chalmerson's a core there, Oduya's up after this year. They clearly don't see him being part of that.
Trevor Van Riemsdyk has probably leaped ahead of him.
That bottom end, and they just traded Nick Leddy, right, who's obviously done a nice job on Long Island. So it's a talent evaluation process in Chicago, and they generally do a pretty good job of that. And, you know, they're going to have a guy in the system now who's a little bit behind, you'd think, in terms of being a 2014 pick, but still somebody they can develop over time. And it might just be the preference. I don't know. Those types of trades are always interesting because we really don't know much about either guy.
Sure. Let's wrap it up and go to cheers and jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard Pollock.
Jerome McGinley last night got his 1,200th career point, tying him for 46th place with Dino Cicerelli. And, you know, class act.
Yeah.
A guy who can do it all, score, more so score than set up, but score, get some assists, play a physical game, drop the gloves when he needs to. You know, great with the media. What else can you ask for? He's really the epitome of a winner who hasn't won the Stanley Cup. You can still be a winner and have not won the Stanley Cup, and that's certainly Jerome McGinley.
And I will pass along my best wishes, and from Richard as well, of course, to Blackhawks legend Stan Mikita. It was announced earlier this week that he is suffering from Lewy body dementia, which is a progressive disease. He's currently under the care of compassionate and understanding caregivers. 22-year professional hockey career as a Blackhawks player, all-time leading point scorer for the Blackhawks and second in goals, a true Chicago sports icon, as they say.
He's right here.
Pass on our, yeah, there he is, right next to us, a Boston Pizza on
Legends of Hockey
yeah. poster. So we pass along our best wishes to Stan Mikita in his health battles. That's it for this Saturday afternoon in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our guest, Daryl Ray of the Dallas Stars color analyst. Big thank you to George Johnson from the Calgary Herald. And a big thank you to Jim Jameson of the Vancouver Province. Thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Bernstein's Deli, and, of course, Linden Market Dental Center, Dot Auto Corp, and Royal Sports. Follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. For analyst Richard Pollock, for Michael Remus back at the studio, for Jesse Peltier here on site at Boston Pizza, thanks for listening. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Hustler and Lawless here on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.